Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 4, the Hansa Guhya Prayers, text number 32. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. There are two parties, namely the theist and the atheist. The theist, who accepts the super soul, finds the spiritual cause through mystic yoga. The Sankhya-dehi, however, who merely analyzes the material elements, comes to a conclusion of impersonalism and does not accept the supreme cause, whether Bhagavan, Paramatma, or even Brahman. Instead, he is preoccupied with the superfluous external activities of material nature. Ultimately, however, both parties demonstrate the absolute truth, because although they offer opposing statements, their object is the same ultimate cause. They are both approaching the same Supreme Brahman, to whom I offer my respectful obeisances. Purport. Actually, there are two sides to this argument. Some say that the Absolute Truth has no form, nirakara, and others say that the Absolute Truth has a form, sakara. Therefore, the word form is the common factor. Although some accept it, asti or astika, whereas others try to negate it, nashti or nastika, since the devotee considers the word form, akara, the common factor for both, he offers his respectful obeisances to the form, although others may go on arguing about whether the absolute has a form or not. In this verse, the word yoga sankhya is very important. Yoga means bhakti yoga, because yogis also accept the existence of the all-pervading Supreme Soul and try to see the Supreme Soul within their hearts. As stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam 12.13.1, dhyana vastita tadgatena manasa pashantiyam yogina. The devotee tries to come directly in touch with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whereas the yogi tries to find the super soul within the heart by meditation. Thus, both directly and indirectly, yoga means bhakti yoga. Sankhya, however, means physical study of the cosmic situation through speculative knowledge. This is generally known as jnana shastra. The Sankhya-dehis are attached to the impersonal Brahman, but the absolute truth is known in three ways. Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavan, Iti, Shabdyate. The Absolute Truth is one, but some accept Him as impersonal Brahman, some as the Super Soul existing everywhere, and some as Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The central point is the Absolute Truth. Although the impersonalists and personalists fight with one another, they focus upon the same Param Brahman, the same Absolute Truth. In the Yoga Shastras, Krishna is described as follows. Krishnam pisangavaram ambudekshanam chaturbhujam shankya gad yudayudam. So, as far as I can see, it means that this describes Krishna, who has limbs like anguvaram, who has beautiful limbs and Ambujeshanam, lotus-eyed, four arms. He has four arms carrying the Sankhya, the conch shell, the god of the club, and lotus flower and disc. As the pleasing appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's bodily features, His limbs and dress are described. The Sankhya Shastra, however, denies the existence of the Lord's transcendental form. The Sankhya Shastra says that the Supreme Absolute Truth has no hands, no legs, and no name. Ya nama rupa guna padiparam achakshura ashotram ekam advitiyam api nama rupadikam nasti. The Vedic mantras say, apani paro Javano Grihita. The Supreme Lord has no hands and no legs, but He can accept whatever is offered to Him. Actually, such statements accept that the Supreme Lord has hands and legs, but deny that he has material hands and legs. This is why the Absolute is called Aprakat, Aprakrita. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, has the Satchitananda Vigraha, a form of eternity, knowledge, and bliss, not a material form. The Sankhyites, or Jnanis, deny the material form, and the devotees also know very well that the Absolute Truth, Bhagavan, has no material form. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchitananda Vigraha Anadya Adya Govinda Sarva Karana Karana. Krishna, who is known as Govinda, is the Supreme Controller. He has the eternal, blissful, spiritual body. He is the origin of all. He has no other origin, but he is the prime cause of all causes. The conception of the Absolute without hands and legs and the conception of the Absolute with hands and legs are apparently contradictory, but they both coincide with the same truth about the Supreme Absolute Person. Therefore, the word Vastu Nishtayo, which is used here, indicates that both the yogis and Sankhyas are the reality, but they are arguing about it from different points of view, viewpoints of material and spiritual identities. Param Brahman, or Brihat, is the common point. The Sankhyites and yogis are both situated in the same Brahman, but they differ because of different angles of vision. The directions given by the Bhakti Shastra point one in the perfect direction, because the Supreme Personality of Godhead says in the Bhagavad Gita, Bhakti Mam Abhijananti, only by devotional service am I to be known. The Bhaktis know that the Supreme Person has no material form, whereas the Jnanis simply deny the material form. One should therefore take shelter of the Bhakti Marg, the path of devotion, then everything will be clear. Jnanis concentrate on the Virat Rupa, the gigantic universal form of the Lord. This is a good system in the beginning for those who are extremely materialistic, but there is no need to think continuously of the Virat Rupa. When Arjuna was shown the Virat Rupa of Krishna, he saw it, but he did not want to see it perpetually. He therefore requested the Lord to return to his original form as two-armed Krishna. In conclusion, learned scholars find no contradictions and the devotee's concentration upon the spiritual form of the Lord. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchitananda Vigraha. In this regard, Srila Madhvacharya says that less intelligent non-devotees think that their conclusion is the ultimate, but because the devotees are completely learned, they can understand that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the ultimate goal. Verse 1. Asti ti nashti ti dravastu nishtayo ekastayor vina viruda dharmayo avekshitam kinchana yoga sankhyo samamparam yinukulam brihatat. There are two parties, namely the theist and the atheist. The theist, who accepts the super soul, finds the spiritual cause through mystic yoga. The Sankhyite, however, who merely analyzes the material elements, comes to a conclusion of impersonalism and does not accept the supreme cause, whether Bhagavan, Paramatma, or even Brahman. Instead, he is preoccupied with the superfluous external activities of material nature. Ultimately, however, both parties demonstrate the absolute truth, because although they offer opposing statements, their object is the same ultimate cause. They are both approaching the same Supreme Brahman, to whom I offer my respectful obeisances. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Purushottaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Kiravane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pujarane Nirvise Saraswini Vade Paskat Yade Sitarane. So in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Sanyasyastu Mahabaho Dukamaptum Ayogadaha Yoga Yuktam Munir Brahma Natrena Digachati. That merely by renouncing activities One can, and yet not engaging in devotional service to the Lord cannot make one happy. But a thoughtful person engaged in devotional service can achieve the Supreme without delay. In the Bhagavad Gita, this question of what is the higher truth, whether the form of Krishna or the form of impersonal Brahman, is raised many times. Even Prabhupada points out that the great impersonalist Sankaracharya has said Narayana Paro Vyakta, that Narayana is above the material world. But this does not mean that Sankaracharya, although he was actually a covered impersonalist, in the sense that he was an incarnation of Lord Shiva, who is the greatest Vaishnava, Vaishnava Yata Sambhu, that he's the greatest of all the Vaishnavas. But in his incarnation of Sankaracharya, he taught impersonalism. So when he said Narayana Paro Vyakta, he agreed that Narayana was above material creation, but his idea was that Narayana has created the material world, but ultimately above Narayana is impersonal Brahman. But although Narayana may be above the material world, transcendental, but transcendental to Narayana is Brahman, impersonal Brahman. So even the Sankhyas, they may agree, yes, Narayana Paro Vyakta, but they won't agree that Krishna's form is superior to impersonal Brahman. But here it says, for instance, Sanyasas Tun Mahabaho. So this raises the question of what is the difference in the realizations? And one of the differences, as mentioned here, is that those who are sannyasis, for instance, who take to the meditational form of yoga, for instance, Jnana Yoga, Krishna explains throughout the Bhagavad Gita that one disadvantage is klesho dikutarastesham avyakta sakta ketasam avyakta hi gatir dukam dehavadvir avakite. Shri Radha Gopinath, Shri Vajranath, Shri Sri. That one disadvantage is it is full of trouble. So although in the Bhagavad Gita, for instance, Krishna has said, Sankhya Yoga Pritag Bala Pravadanti Napandita Ekamapyasita Samyak Ubaya Virute Vula, that only the foolish, they say that Sankhya Yoga is different from the that Karma Yoga or devotional service is different from the analytical study of the material world Sankhya. That one who's actually learned it knows that he applies himself well to one of these paths achieves the results of both. So this appears to be a little contradictory. Only the foolish, those who are Bala, they say that Sankhya and Karma Yoga are different. But we know that they are different. They're not the same path. But they do have a similarity. That through Sankhya Yoga, one can indirectly come to the realization of the Absolute Truth. That there's a direct path. The direct path is known as Buddha Yoga or Bhakti Yoga. And the indirect path is known as Sankhya Yoga or different types of yogas such as Hatha Yoga, Dhyana Yoga, etc. So when they come indirectly to realize the Absolute Truth through the path of Karma Yoga, Dhyana Yoga, Astanga Yoga, and then come to the point of Bhakti Yoga. So Bhakti Yoga, Prabhupada writes, in order to understand Bhakti Yoga completely, one may analyze the different types of yoga that comprise Bhakti Yoga. But that does not mean that everyone has to take to all the different paths in order to come to Bhakti Yoga. If one is actually very fortunate, he can immediately take up the process of Bhakti Yoga. And by taking up the process of Bhakti Yoga, automatically achieves the results of all the other different yogas. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita, although Krishna has started the Bhagavad Gita with the first six chapters, which are actually describing Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, and Sankhya Yoga, or Astanga Yoga, of course, if we read the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada has very kindly analyzed all the different verses from the point of view of Bhakti Yoga. So it appears to us, or to the one who reads the Bhagavad Gita, that only Bhakti Yoga is being described. But it is possible, if one is actually very anxious, that he could also write the first six chapters especially from the point of view of Karma Yoga, or from the point of view of Jnana Yoga, or from the point of view of Bhakti Yoga, or those who are Prema Bhaktis, those who have a particular relationship of a mood of service to Krishna, may even analyze each chapter according to that particular mood of service that they have. So Krishna, he is so expert that any one of his verses can be explained or analyzed or understood from many different points of view. So everyone will think, oh, Krishna is very nice. He agrees with me, or I agree with him. That Krishna wants everyone to... Krishna doesn't want to cause unnecessary disagreements. Although he comes here, and when the demons come, they disagree with Krishna. Krishna kills them. But for people in general who are a little interested in making some advancement in spiritual life, then Krishna doesn't want to start any disagreements with them. He simply wants everyone to agree, and this way bring everyone to the ultimately on a progressive path towards him. So Prabhupada writes in the seventh chapter's first verse, in the first six chapters of the Bhagavad Gita, the living entity has been described as a non-material spirit soul capable of elevating himself to self-realization by different types of yogas. So these different yogas are actually progressive, and as the living entity follows them, he can actually make some progress towards higher and higher levels of understanding. Even in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's stated that devotional service is that has the foreground of renunciation and knowledge. Bhakti tat sharadana munayo jnana shuta. Tat sharadana munayo jnana vairagya yuktaya. That devotional service has in the foreground both renunciation, vairagya, and jnana, or knowledge. That one can be a pure devotee of Krishna unless he actually has renunciation from the material world, from sense gratification. And at the same time, he has some positive understanding about his identity. So, of course, this is the platform in which the Sankhyites, those who are trying to analyze the material world, are striving to come to. Detachment from the material world and knowledge. Real knowledge, of course, the yogis come to when they realize, as it says here, dhyanena, dhyane vastita, tadgatena, tam yogina. That knowledge means to actually understand Krishna, how Krishna is all-pervading, how Krishna is all-powerful in this material world. But if one is fortunate, he can avoid all these, because Krishna says that by concentrating one's mind upon Krishna, one can know everything completely, namely the absolute truth, the material nature, the living entities, and their manifestations with paraphernalia. That is actually by learning to concentrate the mind on the form of Shyamasunda that all these different aspects of yoga and knowledge are all revealed to one, but not otherwise. Still, not everyone will accept that. But here it mentions that even one takes up the impersonal path, that it's very troublesome. The jnanis and the yogis, they'll argue with each other whether God is personal or impersonal. But the real point is that the scriptures, they try to negate the idea that at first the scriptures try to negate the idea that God is material, at least. Because if one is on a material platform, there's no question of spiritual life. 99.9% of the people have a material conception of reality. They think that everything has come from matter. This is called asatyam apratishtam te jagaro horanishvaram parashparam sambhutam kim anyat kama haitukam. They say that everything is unreal, that there's no Ishvara, there's no controller here, it has no foundation. It is simply produced by different material desires. But there's no conception of anything beyond that. Therefore, when people hear about Krishna, the Supreme, they naturally think that he has material form just like we have. He may be a little bit more powerful. Maybe he did a few more exercises in his past life. Maybe he studied a book, How to Become God. He actually became God. But after all, he's just an ordinary person just like we are. So when they hear about God, they can't conceive how a person could actually have an all-blissful, all-knowing, eternal body. Therefore, they consider God to be something like his body to be material, and they naturally consider the Varat Rupa of God to be supreme. They think that this material energy is the ultimate, there's nothing beyond it, there's nothing superior to it. So with such a conception, there's no question of spiritual life. So at the beginning of spiritual life, the scripture, or to aid one, to guide one, at this beginning of spiritual life, the scriptures, they advise us to negate the material conception of God's existence. And to try to understand something beyond that. But here it says that even one tries to do that through the Sankhya philosophy, the result is dukkha. One still remains morose, unhappy. It may produce some freedom from anxiety, but one does not actually become joyful, or one doesn't experience ananda. Therefore, ultimately, so many impersonalists, they rise up to the platform of impersonal realization, or they get some understanding of the difference between themselves and matter. But Prabhupada said, then they simply fall down again. They rise up, they realize that I'm not this body, but because they haven't realized anything beyond that, therefore they become anxious to get happiness somewhere, so they come looking for chapatis again in the material world. Therefore, one has to understand these things very clearly, that God, actually, although he has there's two types of worship called Nirguna and Saguna. So the worship of the Lord in the temple is called Saguna worship. The Lord possessing seemingly material qualities. But actually the Lord has no material qualities. He simply appears in a way that facilitates the worshippers, the worship of the worshipper. Because God is all omnipotent. Therefore, he can appear in a way in which he can accept the service of his worshipper. Otherwise, how can one limit God? If God is all-powerful, then how can one limit God? But that does not mean that he's taking on material qualities. He has no material qualities. The example is used that just like the post office box, the government, the post office can authorize different boxes in which you can put your mail. It is not that I paint some box, some color. I don't know what color the post office box is here. What's that? Red. It's not that I paint some box red and put it outside and drop my mail in it and expect the mailman to come and pick it up. Because it's not authorized, therefore our mail won't go anywhere. But if one goes to the authorized post office box, although it is not the post office, but because it's authorized by the post office, therefore the letter will go to its destination. So similarly, Krishna has authorized his form, that if one creates a form, and there are different ways of creating that form, one of the ways is by wood or marble or even painting or even within the mind. If one creates a form that way that's authorized according to scripture, then and worships it according to the scriptural injunctions, then Krishna will accept such worship. But if one takes the impersonal path, trying to understand the Supreme, it is very difficult. Prabhupada writes in the Bhagavad Gita, one has to study this literature, which is not very easy to study. One has to learn the language in detail, the Sanskrit language in every aspect. One has to try to understand. They make a tune, the Maha Mantra. They can cough to that. Everything will be nice. That one has to try to understand the non-perceptual feelings, etc. So this is very difficult because we have a body, and even if we didn't have this body, that we have a spiritual body by nature. Therefore, to try to conceive of something without a body, without a form, is very difficult because we have this bodily concept in mind. So after many, many years of practice, one may make some progress in this way. But devotional service is much easier. Perhaps sometimes it's too easy for people to accept. They think that spiritual life has to be very difficult, very vague, very mystical, unknown, inconceivable. Otherwise, how can it be spiritual life? But devotional service is very simple, simply by offering obeisances to the deity in the temple, by offering one's food, by hearing the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by engaging in different types of worship, then one can actually come to realize Krishna, very simply. But if one takes the impersonal path, the indirect path, and tries to make progress in that way, even if he becomes successful, which is very difficult, Krishna says, bhavanam janmanam ante. It would take many, many lifetimes. Nowadays, we're so impatient. We want this is the pill generation. We want everything, just pop a pill and you get it, whatever it is. Because they advertise, improve your memory, take this pill. So people think it's something so cheap. I'll just take a few pills and I'll get a super memory. Become happy, take a few pills. Become strong, take a few pills. And it'll happen overnight. So people are falsely believing that everything you can get very cheaply by popping some pills. So everyone is lacking because the bodily conception of life is so strong due to the emphasis on sense gratification, because people are so much absorbed in sense gratification. And the more one becomes absorbed in sense gratification, then the more the demands of sense gratification are there. And the more one's consciousness becomes covered, so one simply becomes more and more absorbed in the bodily conception of life, in the sense, in serving the senses, and loses more and more his patience, because the desires of sense gratification push him all the more strongly. So therefore all patience is lost, and everyone wants everything very quickly, very cheaply. Therefore, it's very difficult to practice anything that takes more than, 15 minutes a day. People think, oh, this is a great burden. try this type of meditation 15 minutes a day, and at the end of a month you realize God. That you're God. So people now, let's try it 15 minutes a day. And even that's difficult. Even that's a great burden. So they give it up after 2 weeks. Oh, this is too difficult. They're asking too much. Therefore, it's not unusual that people are not flocking to the Hare Krishna movement. Because as soon as they find out that actually it's telling people to control their senses, and not only to control them, but to utilize them in the service of the deity, that we believe that God is a person, they think, oh, this is too much. But still, one takes the personal path. Even if one is sincere, which is maybe one person out of 100 million billion are sincere, the one person who goes to the Himalayas and meditates there for some 100 lifetimes and then realizes that it's pretty cold around here and he leaves, goes home, gets a heater and brings it back to the Himalayas, writes home to his mother, "Dear Mom, I almost realized I'm God, but can you send a heater?" But even if one realizes that he's Brahman and then realizes that he's not happy, then when he tries to take his spiritual life, personal life, worship the deity, he can't easily give up this impersonal conception of life. He comes to the temple, worships the deity, and the deity looks exactly like a statue to him, and everyone else, his relationships are all impersonal, and everyone's getting on his case, and he's thinking, this is too much. It was much more peaceful when I was back home meditating 15 minutes a day. But to live with these people, this is too much. And not only that, but they're saying that ultimately it's not... They're thinking that I'm not God. They're thinking that this statue in the temple is God. This is too much. They get on my case, me, God, and they worship this stone statue. These people are all in ignorance. I think I'll go home. So, such practice of impersonalism later on becomes an impediment towards making any advancement beyond that. Therefore, in the beginning, it is very troublesome, and at the end, it becomes troublesome also. Therefore, especially in Kali Yuga, this impersonal path is not recommended. But we should understand that it is a progressive path. It's meant for people who are so materially engrossed that they have to somehow or another give up this material conception of life. So therefore they try to conceive of something beyond matter. But generally they start thinking that this type of experience is like merging of the bubbles into the ocean. So Prabhupada said that this is a fearful conception of life. And others, if they don't come in contact with the devotees, they simply go from materialism to impersonalism, then they generally reject both. And they conclude that everything is void. So Prabhupada said that there are three anarthas, three main impediments: a fear of a personal spiritual identity, negligence of spiritual life, and the concept of void, which underlies the frustration of existence. So one has to get rid of these three conceptions, and then one can actually take sincerely to the process of devotional service. Although we are practicing devotional service, we are also haunted by these conceptions. Therefore, we're a little afraid of what my real identity is in spiritual life, what my form is. Is it something like a ghost? Do I just float around in the spiritual world? What do I do? And a negligence of spiritual life. Do we actually have faith that if I utilize this body fully in spiritual life, then I'll actually be happy and get the proper reciprocation? Or will I become, as Arjuna said, like a ribbon cloud with no position in either sphere? I've given up my family, my mother and father, my pet dog, my parakeet. I've moved into the temple. I'm associating with these persons, I'm trying to do some service, but But especially in the beginning, one may not feel that he's getting back what he's actually expecting. Therefore, sometimes devotees, those who are aspiring to become devotees, they put in so much service for so many years, but because they haven't really understood spiritual life, what spiritual life is, they think it's something like material life, that Krishna will solve one's material problems. Therefore, when they don't get everything that they wanted, or if they get something that they want, and they expect more and more, when they leave devotional service, they think that God has a permanent debt to them now. That God should automatically pay all their bills, or the temple should help them out, that the temple is eternally indebted to them for their service rendered. They should get back pay, etc. Because they have some material conception of spiritual existence. They think that they're not actually prepared to come to live in the temple to practice devotional service without expectation of return, simply accepting the minimum. They actually, in their heart, they think it's some kind of business deal with God. Therefore, they neglect actual spiritual life. And ultimately, if one is in the material conception of life, or in an impersonal conception of life, then ultimately, especially in this age, there's no realization. So one will be haunted by the fact that perhaps everything is ultimately void, that is simply wasted. So one has to get free from these different stages of misconceptions and arthas, and then, as we become gradually free from these misconceptions, we can actually surrender to Krishna. We can actually take up the process with full enthusiasm, full confidence, and be patient about obtaining the result. Then one can actually make progress. But if one does not analyze these things, if one is not hearing attentively about these different subtle philosophies, then one will be continuously haunted by them without any real consciousness about them. In the background, one will always become to maintain his attachments, and because one is attached, maintain his fear, and ultimately his frustrations in life. So, thank you very much. Are there any questions? Yes.
And I just wanted to make a point, actually, for us. Sometimes, like, when you're just a new devotee and you go to the temple, maybe have some talent for, being assigned a talent. Or you can go out, you can make people distribute books, make money from the temple. Because in England, especially, my experience is that a lot of devotees, when they come in, they show some ability to collect, to do sankirtan and make money in the temple. And they're pushed, to it used to be anyway in England, the mentality, that they were pushed, to collect more and more and more money. So they would spend 10 years or 5 years or whatever, collecting big amounts of money compared to what they would earn as a karmi. You're just working like an ass, in a common situation.